south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Here's something I've been meaning to get to for a while. I get questions all the time from people asking me about certain Latin government requirements regarding entry and exit visas, time periods required, government paperwork necessary, etc., etc. But, you know, no one can know all that off the top of their heads. Even though with all 20 Latin American countries, about 90% of the time, the procedures are pretty much exactly the same. It's that 10% that'll screw you up every time. And you know, with all Latin countries, the right hand never knows what the left hand is doing, so there might be rules that are not being followed by one group of bureaucrats and strictly followed by another. It's crazy. Not to mention the idiot bureaucrats are changing the rules all the time and they never let you know about it, which could mean last month's tried and true method of getting a visa is not quite the same this month. So sometimes when you're traveling and you hit the border or the airport, you find out the hard way. And it's certainly true that things aren't getting any easier due to pressure from the U.S. because the U.S. authorities, especially the tax authorities, don't want the sheep leaving the barn. Well, I take that back. At least for now, they'll let you leave the barn, but they don't want your assets leaving the barn. That's for sure. So basically, every year, Uncle Sam gives out gigantic handouts to most every Latin country, except the few that are absolutely not playing ball. Then that way, when the U.S. says jump, the Latin political pusbags say, how high? So, traveling to foreign countries is definitely not getting any easier, nor is getting foreign residency, whether it's permanent or temporary. Oh, and it used to be so easy, and now, well, you've got all kinds of hoops to jump through, and sometimes hoops you never even knew were there suddenly appear. Which is why it's absolutely imperative that you get that plan B going now. The world is not going to follow your timeline. It doesn't care about when you get your Social Security or whether your pension will kick in 1 year or 10 years. Unfortunately, no one's crystal ball works all that well. Therefore, the tipping points will fall when they want to fall, not when you want them to fall. Which brings me to the email I got just yesterday. This one comes from Mr. K. It says, Dear Johnny, do you know anything about a change to the Nicaraguan immigration policy that now is supposed to require me or anyone else to apply for a visa at least a week ahead of time to be able to get into the country? You see, Johnny, a Canadian friend of mine insists I have to fill out some paperwork and submit it, or I can't get into Nicaragua. Never heard of that one before. I've always gone in and out of Nicaragua, no problems and no paperwork. Just flashed my U.S. passport and they let me right in. So, Johnny, what's the scoop? Have things changed? Is that true or is that just a rumor? Signed, Mr. K. Well, Mr. K, we all know Nicaragua has been a very inexpensive expat destination for some time now. In fact, all that tourist dough piling in, plus the Chinese coming in and spreading dough around thinking they're going to get that Nicaraguan answer to the Panama Canal, which we all know will never get off the ground. Well, all that dough has lined the pockets of that tiny pizza-faced tyrant, Daniel Ortega. Oh yeah, he and his family and all his friends and cronies are living like sultans. So he's one socialist tin pot dictator who's been completely bought off with capitalist dough, which is why he's fixed the elections and constitution so that he never goes out of power. Now, the fact is, 99% of all gringos and expats who move or work or play here in Latin America don't really give a damn who's in power in a given Latin country. These aren't our countries, so we don't vote, and we don't politic, and we don't schmooze. Of course, down here in Latin America, you've always got U.S. contractors and embassy suckasses, but we don't count ourselves in that group. So in the end, we come down here for more freedom, and we want to be left alone. And that's pretty much the way it is, except in a few odd places like Venezuela and Cuba. And if you choose one of those places for your plan B, good luck to you. You're going to need it. By the way, I've been assured by a few people I know living in Nicaragua, both locals and gringos, that if there wasn't a sudden tourist boom and the Chinese wouldn't have spread millions around, that tin pot dictator Ortega would have turned that nice little country into a cross between Venezuela and Cuba. In fact, I've been told many times that you never want to say anything or complain against him or his family. People who do seem to have a lot of bad luck. Sometimes they even disappear. Now, we're not talking about gringos and expats here. They don't kick up or make a fuss about the local government. In fact, most gringos and expats remain completely ignorant of the politics of the country they live in. The fact is, they need us a lot more than we need them. In fact, we don't need them much at all. But you see, in most Latin countries, you'll find the locals, they all agree their governments and their leaders are totally corrupt. But then again, they all want to work for government because they pay twice as much as in the private sector. Go figure, huh? And in that regard, it's much worse in Nicaragua than it is in many other Latin countries. You can tell locals get a bit nervous if anyone starts dissing Noriega. Anyway, in regards to Mr. K's inquiry, I'm afraid to say there is trouble brewing on the Nicaraguan immigration front. So beware. I'll fill you in by reading this article that's been translated into English. Here goes. Nicaraguan immigration authorities have introduced a new and inexplicable measure that requires foreigners who intend to enter the country to file a, quote, notice of entry statement at least 7 days in advance of their arrival. And obviously, the Nicaraguan business and tourism sector have expressed concerns and are calling on the Nicaraguan government to analyze the impact of the migratory restrictions imposed, and certainly its negative effect on the tourism industry. And here's how the new rule reads in English. It says, immigration services say that foreigners now must fill out an entry form at least 7 days in advance of their visit. Some of the information required will be travel document numbers, ticket and reservation numbers, a statement whether the trip is personal, family, or a group visit, if it's to participate in tourism, cultural, religious, sports, business, or any other activities, including your visit's itinerary. All right, I'm at the Nicaraguan Embassy website now, and I'm clicking on the form you have to fill out. Oh, and that's great. It's all in Spanish, of course, and we know only about 3% of gringos can read Spanish. Big help, huh? Anyway, if you want to copy this thing, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll shoot it over to you. But basically, what they're asking for is your legal name, passport information, and all that. That's usual, right? After that, it gets intrusive and tricky. It says, which border or frontier are you entering the country from, and which one will you be leaving from, and what are the dates? Then it says, what are the places, dates, and descriptions of your activities in the country? Asking for your telephone numbers and emails. Then it's got a line that says something strange. It says, you can visit me at the following direction or directions. That me is meaning you, not the government me. Nice of them to include that first person invitation to visit you wherever you are in Nicaragua, just in case they have to ask you some questions face to face. How nice. Sounds a bit Orwellian, don't you think? However, the article does say that so far, since the rules have been implemented in late August, there have been no reports in the English or Spanish language media and social media, such as Facebook or Twitter, of any foreign visitor being actually denied entry based on not filling out those requirements. However, government rules and regulations throughout Latin America are always very slow to be implemented. For example, throughout Latin America, car driver's licenses are supposed to be paid and renewed by January 1st of each year. Yet, nearly everyone waits till June, July, or even August to pay the license quota. It's that mañana time thing, which is what Nicaraguan Chamber of Commerce officials are saying too. In some months, this will be implemented with a much stronger hand. Then we have a statement from Lucy Valente, president of the Nicaraguan National Chamber of Tourism. She says when word of this gets out internationally, it will have a definite negative effect on the tourism industry. And then it says the country of El Salvador was the first to capitalize on the fact that Nicaragua was making it more difficult to visit there as a tourist. The Salvadorian Tourism Board and tourist agents placing various messages on Facebook and Twitter saying that there's a travel alarm for El Salvadorians who might want to go to Nicaragua. Then they say they don't recommend travel to Nicaragua unless you absolutely have to make the journey, which sort of indicates tourism can be a cutthroat industry. It's not a nice game. Then Lucy Valente, president of the National Chamber of Tourism for Nicaragua, says, we have been getting complaints from people who have come by land from Honduras and Costa Rica. Tour operators from Costa Rica specifically are complaining about having to send a list 7 days in advance, which is a real problem. when their tourist groups often change travel itineraries from one day to the next. What happens then? What if you change your itinerary and the paperwork you submitted does not reflect those spur-of-the-moment changes? What kind of trouble might you be in? Would there be a fine? No one knows. Then she says this new law seems to be causing great damage to our public image, saying the Nicaraguan business sector, particularly companies working in the tourism industry, regret the government's decision to implement this measure. The only thing it does is to discourage the entry of foreigners who, in their vast majority, come to the country to take part in tourist activities. Complaints have now arisen from Costa Rica, Honduras, El Salvador, and other nations about the difficulties of this new measure, especially from tour operators and tourist companies that manage trips back and forth from Nicaragua to neighboring countries. Then she says Nicaragua is the only place in Latin America that has implemented this kind of rule. In fact, she says, I don't even know of anywhere else in the world where something like that's implemented. And finally, the article says, this will definitely have an impact on tourism, which last year in 2016 brought in 1.5 million visitors. So then what does this mean for the average gringo and expat tourist? Well, more paperwork, more hoops to jump through. It's certainly not well publicized, but as the old cliche goes, ignorance of the law is no excuse. So expect a lot of fallout from this. And soon enough, when the implementation of this gets kicked into high gear, you can expect a lot of delays at land borders and airports. Now, the real question is, how long before other Latin countries or other countries in general implement the same stupid rules? Then again, maybe the government will get enough heat, they drop it altogether. Well, all I can say is governments, especially Latin governments, are all about shuffling paperwork and adding to their lard-ass malignant bureaucracies. So I'm guessing other Latin countries will pick up on it, but we'll just have to see. So how can you avoid all that? Well, there's two ways. One, skip Nicaragua altogether, or get your residency in Nicaragua. Because you see, as a permanent or temporary resident, you got permission to go in and out at will. Oh, and by the way, speaking of tourism, here's some news that's enlightening and pretty risque at that. According to a recently published book, Ethics of Tourism, A Critical and Applied Perspective, the conclusion is romance and sexual encounters are a key factor in world travel. And that's supposed to be a new revelation? All right, I'm sure most of us can agree on that. Then it states, some people regard frequent sexual activity while traveling as a way of enhancing their travel experiences. Oh, another brilliant conclusion, you think? Then it continues, according to recent studies, which can be disputed, by the way, since these days anyway, for every expert, there's an equal and opposite expert, here we have in this report the top 10 world destinations for sex tourism. Number 1, Thailand. Number 2, Brazil. Number 3, Spain. 4, Indonesia. Number 5, Colombia. Number 6, the Philippines. Number 7, Kenya. Number 8, Netherlands. Number 9, Cambodia. And number 10, the Dominican Republic. Two things aren't quite right about that list. Who'd have thunk Spain? I've been there a bunch of times and, well, it doesn't seem like a sex capital. And 2, where the hell's Costa Rica on that list? I'm thinking there was some pressure to omit Costa Rica. Why? Well, I'll tell you. First of all, I lived there for a couple of years, so I kind of know the place. In fact, all you have to do is take a walk around the Central Park in San Jose, Costa Rica, especially when it starts getting dark, and tell me what you see. I'll give you a hint. Tons of old, balding, pot-bellied gringos, with twice as many young Costa Rican ladies, not too far removed from adolescence, all made up, decked out in heels, vying for attention. But you knew that already. Or did you? So anyway, we've got 4 Spanish-speaking countries in that top 10 list. It should be 5 if you include Costa Rica. Kind of lopsided, don't you think? Then the article goes on to say, social problems arise when particular countries or cities acquire a reputation as a destination or become attractive for sex tourism. Now, you heard Colombia mentioned on that list. And believe me, it really belongs there. Which is why it's important to point out to single gringos and expats, looking not only for love, but maybe a permanent mating, dating relationship leading to marriage, that the ladies in Colombia, at least the majority of them, according to reports, really know how to manipulate a clueless gringo into a situation. Now, you might say stupid gringos who get themselves in that position deserve it, and they probably do, I can't tell you how many times I've heard from gringos and expats in Colombia saying the worst thing you could ever do is hook up with a Colombian girl and bring her back to the United States. Relationships like that almost never work out. Though it's much different if you meet a Colombian girl and stay in Colombia, especially if she's an educated girl with a career. But the vast majority of them, especially the ones on mating and dating sites, and there are thousands of sites like that, they want a gringo to save them and bring them back to the States. Specifically if they had their druthers, my jammy. But as you probably know, rationality, intelligence, and love rarely mix. Or as expat Eddie once put it, you're in big trouble if you're one of those guys who is a sucker for a pretty face. It works the other way too if you're a gringa and you're a sucker for the suave Latin lover type. Either way, you're looking at trouble. But I digress as usual, though not much. Let's see, where were we? Oh yeah, back to that book. Then it says, a word on prostitution in general. In some countries, such as Cambodia and Thailand, having sex with prostitutes is considered so commonplace that men who do not engage in commercial sex may be considered unusual or even abnormal by their peers. And in most cases, even if a man is married, his wife will tolerate a certain amount of that behavior. Not to mention, however, I did mention this in an earlier show, studies indicate that in Latin countries, including Italy and Spain, sex with prostitutes is considered a rite of passage or an expression of individuality. And since prostitution is legal in most all Latin countries, often a father or older male adult relative will initiate young boys in the family once they've reached the ripe old age of 15, 15 años, to a night or more generally a few minutes in a brothel. In fact, the article says in some Latin countries that's how most young males have their first sexual experience. Again, as far as legality, here's the breakdown of prostitution laws across the Americas. In North America, prostitution is illegal in Canada and the U.S., except in Vegas, or actually right outside Vegas. In Mexico, it's legal. In Central America, it's legal. That'd be Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Belize, with Panama having the most liberal prostitution laws of all. Prostitution is completely legal throughout South America, too. Now, you know, living down here in Latin America for a long, long time, I've had the occasion to run into and meet many single and not-so-single gringo men who have come down for various reasons, sometimes for jobs, teaching, backpacking, whatever. And unfortunately, it seems many of them, probably most of them, end up spending a lot of free times in what they call nightclubs down here. Those are strip clubs. And of course, down here in Latin America, a strip club or a nightclub is also a brothel. Now, that doesn't mean that every guy going in there is looking for that, but that's also a place where a lot of business deals are being done. In fact, just like you see in a lot of Hollywood TV series and movies, guys will meet up in a strip club, sit at a table, talk business, have a few drinks and a sandwich, and leave. Same thing down here in Latin America, though the prostitution angle is always there. In fact, there's a very different attitude about it down here, too, because it's legal and there's really no fear of being busted or disgraced because, again, it's legal. However, this could be quite a problem for single and not too single gringos coming down. In fact, I've heard many sad and wild and crazy stories. In fact, I know a few gringos who, as the old cliche goes, fell in love with the hooker with a heart of gold. Or they were on a mission to save the hooker with a heart of gold. Oops. Only somewhere down the line they found out they'd been had and the heart was gold-plated. Let's just say a lot of clueless single gringos get tricked in that department. Some even as far as getting married and bringing them back home to the States. Man, talk about a fatal mistake. Someday, if we have the time, or by popular request, I'll tell you some stories to that effect that'll curl your toes. Suffice it to say, I've met a lot of very smart gringos here in Latin America who were very stupid in matters of love. But I guess that's true everywhere, huh? All you have to do is look at Albert Einstein. Actually, the letters written by Albert Einstein to his wives and mistresses. Yep, I said wives. It's not rumor. Those letters exist, you know. Einstein's genius did not extend to his love life, which was full of messy affairs, bumpy marriages, bitter endings. I guess news like that doesn't bode well for us mere mortals then, does it? In fact, it's been reported that he said working out the theory of relativity was much easier than working out his personal relationships. All right, switching gears a bit. Remember a couple of shows ago, I mentioned a few countries, a few Latin countries, that have outlawed cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. So when I saw this article, I thought you'd be interested. The title is President Lenin Moreno. Love that name, Lenin, huh? You can be sure he wasn't named after the dead beetle. Who said that? Anyway, it says, President Lenin Moreno of Ecuador scores a big win as National Assembly votes to let private banks manage their digital money system. Like I said, Ecuador made every kind of digital currency illegal except the one their national bank created, and that's the one nobody wants. Figures, huh? Well, as it turns out, on December 28, 2017, just a couple days ago, the legislature voted to let the digital currency system be run by the private sector instead of the idiot slugs in government. Now, this part you'll find interesting and kind of explains why only privately created open source decentralized digital currencies will ever be embraced by the public, like Bitcoin and Ethereum, etc. It says here, according to Assemblywoman Gabriela Laratigui of Ecuador, the change was necessary and overdue because the digital money plan we started 3 years ago with President Correa has been a disaster. It, she said, was an attempt by the government to control the money supply and force people to accept more government control of money. Well, the people didn't trust it, they don't trust the government, and the program completely flopped. However, dyed-in-the-wool socialist legislator Paul Manoz has been quoted as saying, taking the monetary system out of government control is a mistake. We cannot trust the private financial system to fairly run the program. What a poop for brains moron. What he failed to mention was that in 1998, the Ecuadorian financial system completely collapsed. The country effectively went bankrupt. There was a huge sovereign debt and currency crisis caused by, surprise, surprise, the government. So they eliminated their own funny money and went to the U.S. dollar funny money. All right, then the article says, the digital cash system which operates by cell phone has been a resounding failure with the public, attracting less than 10% of its predicted users. And of course, who predicted that number of users? Overestimating the true number of users by 900%. Why, of course, those amazing geniuses in the Ecuadorian government. In fact, it says when the digital currency was announced, the Central Bank of Ecuador estimated the system would have 600,000 users by the beginning of 2017. Instead, it had only 52,000. The majority of those accounts unused and inactive. So, according to private analysts, it's not attracted less than 10% of the government-predicted users, but less than 2%. And most all of those users, surprise, surprise, government employees who were forced into this system initially. All right, just a little update on cryptos and lard-ass government pinheads here in Latin America. All right, on to more practical things. You know, I always carry a very portable water filter when I'm traveling. And at my principal place of residence, I have an under-counter water filter system, multiple-stage sediment, ceramic, and carbon block. And when I'm out and about and I want something other than water, I'll always ask for a beverage in a glass bottle. What's nice about Latin America is that many, many common beverages still come in glass bottles. However, so-called pure water, which is never pure, always comes in plastic. Ugh. Which is why I always have a glass bottle or two with pure water that I made with my system in my car. Now, the mistake I see a lot of gringos and expats and a lot of backpackers make is they'll carry one of those high-tech little bottle or straw purifiers for water. A very good thing, but they'll get a glass with ice when they go to a bar or a restaurant. Now, that's a big mistake. I've been in a lot of Latin kitchens and restaurants where they've had ice machines, and man, they do not change the filters, and sometimes they don't even have it filtered at all. I know I did a segment on that a long time ago, a couple years back. But today we have an update. Part of it comes from a good friend of the program, Jack. He sent me this little blurb about holiday drinking and ice cubes. Tis the season, huh? I'll paraphrase this article a bit. Starts out, not that anyone needs another reason to drink whiskey, but it turns out your hot toddy this season might be even better for you than you ever thought. Yep, whiskey actually has significant antibacterial properties. Man, ain't that great news at the holidays. The secret is in its acidity. While other alcohols have a more neutral pH, like vodka, for example, which has a pH of 6 to 7, whiskey comes in at about 4.2, which is pretty acidic. And, according to researchers who recently published a study in the Annals of Microbiology, it states the most common forms of bacteria cannot survive with that much acidity. So, in other words, whiskey is not only the basis for great drinks, It doubles as a germ killer. So then how did scientists in that study conclude whiskey would be the next big cold and flu fighter? Well, they started by looking into the bacteria served up on the rocks. That is, bacteria in your ice. So, testing 60 samples of ice cubes in the U.S., produced by so-called sanitary restaurant ice cube makers and ice made at industrial ice cube facilities, they found, on average, more than 52 strains of bacteria, some of which can cause many infections in humans. And the worst part? Restaurants and bars had the germiest ice of all. Then, to see how effective ice cubes can actually transfer those pathogens to unknowing consumers, the scientists contaminated the ice cubes with four of the strains they found to be the most prevalent. They dropped those ice cubes in vodka, whiskey, martinis, peach tea, tonic water, and Coca-Cola, and tested the remaining live bacterial levels. The results were that the bacterial levels were reduced a bit across the board, but not all the drinks killed the same amount of bacteria. For example, all four strains of bacteria survived nicely in the vodka and peach tea. Two of the four strains remained in martinis and Coca-Cola. And get this, in the tonic water, one of the strains liked it so much, it survived and grew and grew. Yuck. Now as for the whiskey, it was a superstar. Killed all four strains of bacteria. All right, it's me again, Johnny, but here's what they failed to mention in this report. They failed to mention tequila, which has an average pH of 3.9 to 4.5, some of them even more acidic than whiskey. And which two potent alcoholic beverages are most famously served in Latin America? Well, that would be tequila and whiskey, though not in the same glass. That would be nuts, and look out for the ice. Nope, a Latin American party would not be complete without tequila and Johnny Walker whiskey in particular. Who'd have thunk? Many years ago, Johnny Walker was Johnny on the Spot, the first whiskey label on the scene here in Latin America. The Xerox or Kleenex of whiskeys, making it the favorite by far. So what can we learn from all this? Well, if you insist on restaurant or hotel ice cubes, you're testing fate. And as far as the whiskey and tequila, well, you be the judge. And note, the more celery, fruit, garnish, and other crud you add to any drink, just remember, there's a lot of bacteria hitching a ride there. But you knew that already, right?
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.